Today's daf in Masechet Beitzah, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Zayin. So yesterday we discussed somebody who insisted in being supplied with eggs that were laid eggs. We said the daf kamina would be in terms of their ability to hatch. So there was another guy who insisted, Hudi Amarlei Be'a D'Dichre Laman. He wanted fertilized eggs. So he's insisting on having eggs that come from a male, Bey the Dichrulaman. Yavulei Bey the Safana Mi'ara. And instead, they supplied him with unfertilized eggs. Now, unfertilized eggs are called Safana Mi'ara. Safana Mi'ara means that they become. Basically, what happens is that the chicken, because there's no males around, as we'll see, ends up stimulating itself by rubbing its bottom against the ground. And that causes hormones to create an egg, right? So it'll do this if there's no males around. Now, that safana is like spune tuunecho, things that become hidden and they're underneath her and so on, and now she gets an egg. So this causes ovulation. And this is what the guy gave him. He gave him safana mi'ara eggs, which are obviously, if they're unfertilized, they're not going to hatch. So he comes to Rabbami and he wants a refund. Omar Lalu, and Rabbami says, absolutely, he gets all his money back. So as we asked yesterday, isn't it obvious that if a guy insists on something and he's given something else, that he gets his money back? Pshita. No. Because all he wanted was fertilized eggs, really to eat. The only reason he insisted that they be fertilized is because they're somewhat more richer when they're fertilized. Tobishum de Shemina Tveh. And Lamaynaf Kamina, so who cares? But he insisted that's what he wanted. Gets his money back, right? No, because he can get the difference in the value back, which is Lamaytra Labeni Beni, but he can't claim, well, I told you I want them, and then we tried hatching them, and they never hatched, and now they're wrecked, and so on. He can't say that. Kamash Malan Rabami, he gets an absolute refund. Or maybe it's another thing. That when Rav said, remember this whole discussion began because we're trying to figure out what in the world did Rav mean when he said that we only call an egg after it's laid. Maybe what he meant is, Ibaidema initiata nigmara means after it's legally defined as having been yotze, which would mean that once it's yitziat ruba, so once most of the egg has come out, it would be considered to be yotze. And that would teach us a big chiddush. Namely, the Omer of Yochanan, if an egg was Yotzei Ruba Erev Yontif, and then the chicken did not have the energy to actually fully lay the egg, and it went back into the chicken and was only laid the next day, then there's no problem of Hakana, because it's already considered to be a laid egg. There's no problem of Beit Shemalta beyond. The Ikeri Amir, some say that that's true, except in the opposite direction, that when Rav was saying, Im Yetziatan Nigmara, it means only in yitziyata, a full, actual yitziya. Don't give me this stuff about sort of coming out and then going back in. That's not called yitziya. So it's coming to tell me that not like Rabbi Yochanan, only in yitziyat kula, but ruba not. And then the point would be, don't say that since it mostly came out yesterday, it was considered to be not a beit shenol de biyontav. That's not true. Lafukim in Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, anyway. That was basically an aside, right? I mean, it was just pointing out that the question of defining at what point an egg is an egg, which you thought was sort of esoteric because it only had to do with the dinim of maybe a kadar or mukta, turns out it's not esoteric at all, and that there's a lot of court cases about this, and you can go look it up in common law, and everybody knows it makes a big difference when an egg is called an egg. Okay, and actually, I mean, it really does. The standards for defining eggs and so on are so complex. Of course, the EU has managed to turn this into an art. But anyway, it makes the Gemara, you know, the EU is the one that's got the hair. What they always complain is the Gemara is doing these hair-splitting issues. You think the Gemara is hair-splitting. Okay, so in any event, we found out that the question of eggs is actually a very contemporary and financially important issue. So getting back now to what we said before. So yesterday we had the bright, a gufa, and it said, HaShochet et HaTarnagolet, UMatzah BaBeitzim Gemurot, so you find these eggs inside of the Tarnagolet. You're allowed to eat them with milk, we said. As we originally, I thought maybe Rav was saying that an egg is only an egg if it was already hatched, but otherwise it's considered to be meat. Whereas Rav Yaakov says, Ima yumorot begidin asurot. If they are still attached with any type of connective tissue to the hen, so then they are considered to be basar, and they're not considered to be chalav. So remember, what you have initially is you will always find the eggs early on. They're attached to the ovary. And then you have these little threads that are still attached, and they haven't fallen off of the ovary yet. So that seems to be what he's saying, that if they're still attached, so then they're considered to still be part of the body, and they're not milk. They're not milchik, so not part of another. Mantan al tana rabban. So what would be the basis of this braita? Ha'olcha min yivlat of tahor min ha-shalal shal beitzim min ha-atzamot min ha-gidin min ha-basar shenitlash min ha-chai tahor. So remember, we have a special halacha about a nivlat of tahor, a very unusual din of tumah, that if you touch a nivlas of, or you carry a nivlas of, if it's a kosher bird and it died, so then there's no tumah whatsoever. Touch it, carry it, but if you eat it, then you become tameh. So that's called tum'at beit habliyah, something that makes you tameh only when it's in the swallowing area of your throat. Now, it says over here, however, if you were eating from the shalal shal beitzim, which implies, we think at this point, the cluster, in other words, it's like a that's still attached, we think, or from the bones of the bird, or from the gidim from the birds, or from even the actual basar, but it was not basar of nevela. It was basar that came off while the bird was alive. In all of these cases, he's tar. But if he eats from the eshkol shal beitzim, which now we take as meaning it's literally, it looks like the eshkol of a grapes, so over there, it's actually on the ovary itself, or mina kurkavan from the crop, or mibnei me'ayim, intestines, or you melted down the chelev and then you swallowed it, those are all considered to be basar, tamei. So who is the tamei that says mina shalal shal beitzim tahor? That if we think a shalal shal beitzim means that there's still some threads of tissue connecting this cluster to the ovary. Rav Yosef, well, obviously that's not like Rav Yaakov, because according to Rav Yaakov, he says as long as they're connected in some way to the ovary, they're considered to be basar. So then why would it not be mitame, a person who eats it of a nivlas of tahar? Says Abaye to Rav Yosef, that's not true. You are assuming that the halacha l'gabei dinim of achila that Rav Yaakov spoke about is exactly the same as the inyanim of tuma, and that is not a justifiable assumption. Mimai, it could very well be that the only thing that Rabbi Yaakov said over there is that you're not allowed to eat it with cholav. That's in terms of the iser of basar b'cholav. And remember that when it came to chickens anyway, right, the Rabbanan would go to this whole idea, we're going to call chicken basar. The facts are included in that. We're calling connected eggs to the chicken are also called basar. Don't eat them with cholav. But when it comes to tuma, what did they ever say that? As it did a basar got me the tummy. Midi rice is nivlas oftar. So you'll tell me, well, why would they make a gezeira when it comes to food and eating? I mean, but make them be consistent with the gezeira and say, we're going to view this as basar, so midi rabbanan, you would become tame. I mean, why would we say in the brighton you're not tame at all? Does that make sense? Yes, it does. I'll tell you why. Because le'inyin tuma afushe tuma. Afushe tuma midi rabbanan lo mafshina. The rabbanan have a very strong tendency, wherever possible, not to be geyser tuma, because once you're geyser tuma, you're going to be marba tuma on inyanim that is going to be mafsik truma, and it's going to make problems for people that we try not to do unless it's absolutely essential. So over here, fine. So Rabbi Yaakov says this is one of those non-consistent issues. I mean, how often do you get this problem of tuma? Because only the gabe when to give the beitza a din of the meat of a chicken. And actually, some have an entirely different approach to this, and they understand the shalal shal beitzim to mean the opposite. Because ikedi amrei man tana mina eshkol shal beitzim tameh. Who would say that if you eat the eshkol itself, that you would be tameh? And this, says Reb Yosef, what we're assuming over here is that the Eshkol means what we thought before the Shlal meant, meaning that it's attached by some tissue still, and that must be Reb Yaakov, because it says over there, if he eats the Eshkol, that it's Tameh, because he says, Imayu Moris Beginim Asuris. And in this version, of Abaye said to Reb Yosef, what makes you think that that's the definition of the Eshkol? You're assuming something that is attached to the ovary, but maybe it's not attached to the ovary. It means the ovary itself, which looks like an Eshkol, because it has this place for growing the actual eggs. So, V'chi Tema Eshkol Gufei Maila Mimra, so you'll tell me, well, obviously, so then anybody would say, if you eat the ovary, of course that's part of the body. No, not true, because take a look at the rest of the Braita. The Braita says if you eat the kurkava, or if you eat the b'nei me'ayim, I mean, aren't those part of the body? And nonetheless, the Braita found it's important to mention. Why is it important to mention? Because people don't usually eat that stuff. That's the point. So over there, same thing, afagav the bosaninu, kiva the iki inchi the lo achlis, plenty of people wouldn't put something like that in their mouth. So therefore, itzir plashmina, that nonetheless it's considered to be food, and it's going to be batami betumis nivla softar. Okay, now we kiva the iki inchi the lo achle, itzir plashmina. And it could be that's the only reason it says that it has nothing to do with the Rabbi Yaakov issue at all. Okay. Other issues that are fascinating that we need to understand about the assumptions that we make about an egg being laid on Yontif. So, Tana Rabbana, interesting idea. Anything which mates in the day will actually give birth, whatever that birth means, in the day. Anything that mates at night, it's going to give birth only at night. Anything that can mate either by day or by night, so then it can be born either in the day or the night. So you have some examples. A tarnagolet will not mate in the day, in the nighttime, and therefore it's only going to lay eggs in the day. Did you ever see a bat mating in the day? Of course not. Nighttime is the only fun time. So Nolad Balayla, that refers to bats. Kosha Tashbito Bain Bayom Bain Balayla, that's like a lot of other species, like humans and other species that don't have a specific time and day or night to mate. So getting back to this business about the Tarnagolet mates at the daytime and therefore it only lays an egg in the. Who cares? This seems to be completely off the wall. Ah, it makes all the difference in the world. Imagine you're Batman. I meant the other one. So the eggs, what is the nafkamina in terms of the egg? The nafkamina will be like this. Suppose you find an egg. So now, when was the egg laid? That's the question. So now, Ibrahim Mori, Breder of Kahana, he said like this, that somebody who checks his ekone shel tarnagolet me'erev yontif. So this guy, he's got a chicken coop. He looks it over, erev yontif, towards the, it's already after Shkia, and very disappointed, there's no eggies in it. And then he comes back the next morning, and guess what? He finds an egg, and it's Yontif. You can eat that egg. Because it obviously, the chicken didn't lay that egg at night, because chickens don't lay eggs at night. So it must have been there before. What do you mean it must have been there before? But he looked before. It wasn't there before. Lo badak, says the Gemara, well, since we know the chicken couldn't have laid that egg at night, all right? So then what do you think? You think it just popped in there from a different time? I mean, I would say that it's the same phenomena that we all know. What? I looked in that drawer 1,000 times and I never found it. And now all of a sudden it's there. So you're ready to swear it must have just popped in there. But you know somehow that that's probably not happened. And what happened is you just didn't see it. That must be what happened. So it's Lobodak Yafa Yafa. And, you know, there's another alternative. He might have checked, and it wasn't there. But you know why it wasn't there? Because it had popped back into the chicken, so it was hidden. But Rabbi Yochanan said that once it was Yatsurubo, if it popped back into the chicken, and so anyway, it's going to be Mutran Yantan, because it was considered to be fully Nolad before. So therefore, whatever happened, either way, it would be Mutran. Kid Rabbi Yochanan, either you didn't look, or you couldn't find it because it was in the chicken, but that didn't matter. What? But didn't Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul quote Rav as saying that if you check before, right by the nighttime. And so now it's Bein HaShemashas. Bekina Shetana Golot Me'erev Yontev. And there was no Beitza. The next morning you go up and you find the Beitza there. That Beitza is Osir. Because no Let Be'yontev. Yeah, that's true. But that's talking about Safana Mi'ara eggs. And Safana Mi'ara eggs are basically, they're not dependent in mating. So if they're not dependent in mating, so then they can be laid in the daytime or the nighttime. So then it's, I don't understand. So then why did we say before Rav Mari, if it's talking about Safana Mi'ara, it could be a night, so Rav Mari's case also. How could Rav Mari possibly have said, well, there's no way it could have been late at night. It must be that it was there from last night. Well, how do you know? Maybe it's just a plain old-fashioned Safana Mi'ara egg, and therefore it would be a Beitza Shenol de Bianta. No, that's talking about that there was a male in the vicinity. So if there's a rooster around, what self-respecting chicken is going to turn herself on if there's a real rooster? I mean, come on. So if there's a real rooster, then it's depending on mating. And if it's mating, so then it's going to be only at night. And therefore, Mari says, so there's no chashash of Safana Mi'ara. I understand. And if there's a rooster around, I mean, you know, this chicken may have been misbehaving a little bit, you know, turns itself on, rubs against the ground and so on, gets itself pregnant. Not really pregnant, obviously, but it gets itself into a state of having an egg. So it ovulates. Omer Avina, no, that's a Kabbalah that we have. If there's a rooster in the vicinity, then the chickens behave. So, Kolei Chanika Zohar Lo Safana Mi'ara. Not going to happen. Okay, how far away can the rooster be for the chicken to behave? Well, actually, it would be, Omer Avgavda Mishmei Darav, as long as it's close enough for the chicken to pick up the sound of that rooster. And it hears it. It has to hear it during the daytime, and there's a lot of traffic, so it can even hear it over the traffic noise, right? That's not really the traffic. That's the sound of the sun sawing through the sky, remember? But that, or it might be Rome, which is all over the place. So anyway, there, it's not going to be Safana Mi'ara. And in fact, Rav Mari was so clear about this that there was a case that he found an egg that was not there the night before and was there the next day, and he was matur on Yontav, and there was no rooster all the way up, with 60 houses away. And Rav Mari could hear the sound, and he figured, okay, if that's the case, then this is definitely not Safana Mi'ara, because this chicken knew there's a rooster in the vicinity, she's going to wait for the rooster. Now, the question is, if there is a river between the rooster and the chicken. So now chicken knows rooster ain't ever going to make it here. How's it going to get across that river? So she goes back to her Safana Mi'ara behavior, right? Because there's no rooster going to come. But if there's a bridge, so she figures, okay, the rooster's probably going to walk the block to get to the bridge to be able to cross to get, I mean, a beautiful chicken like me. What a chick. So he's going to be doing whatever he can to get to me. So she's not going to be Safana Mi'ara. But the question is the rooster going to be sufficiently secure on that bridge? That has to be a good bridge. I mean, if it's just a bridge that consists of a rope or one of these things you have to hold on, then she figures, nah, he's not going to feel secure. He's not going to risk his life just for me. So then she's going to go back to her Safana Mi'ara behavior. Anyway, she's got to be pretty well aware of her surroundings, I think, for a chicken. But this is the rule. So therefore, as long as that rooster, Ika Mavra, if there's a bridge, the rooster will cross. But if there's no bridge, then it's not going to cross. And if it has to be a good bridge, Ika Metzra, it's got one of these rope kind of bridges, then it's not going to cross on that. But that's not true, because actually it was once a story, and we know for a fact that the rooster crossed the Metzra. So that must have been some chicken. Okay. So anyway, that was the different halachas about when you can assume Safana Mi'ara and when you cannot. What a shame that Ira is not here. These are like obviously exactly the type of issues that are going to be nogea your IKEA cabinet. Because can the rooster get to the IKEA cabinet is also a question. Or will she figure he's never going to be able to make his way in? Okay, so what we had before, going back, we had before the halacha that if you had a case where could have been Zafana Miaris. Rabbi Yosef ben Shaul said that according to Rav, you have to assume that it actually was laid at night. Okay, so you said, B'mayukinda. So what was the case over there? Dafka Zafana Miara. But if we're talking about Zafana Miara, so why are we saying that in the case where you Dafka checked out the chicken coop before Yom Tov and it was empty, and then you have to worry about Zafana Miara, right? But if you weren't Bodek, then it's okay. Why? Because you should still assume, even though you're ready to assume it's a Zafana Miara, you should still assume it was there from yesterday and it didn't come in the night. I mean, why not? Could have been Zafana Miara. So in a Kilo Barak Nami, no. Kilo Barak, I would say that you could. It was probably from yesterday. So then even if you were Barak Nami, I mean, there's other excuses you could say. And maybe not from yesterday, because I checked, but maybe it was one of these Rabbi Yochanan cases that it was Yatzdaruba and I didn't find it and it popped back into the chicken. Can Rabbi Yochanan? No, come on. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. This happens often already. It's very unlikely that an egg came out partway and then went back in. So that we're not going to use as an excuse. On the other hand, if there was no checking the night before, it's definitely more standard for the egg to have been there from before. And therefore, Rove of the situation is, even as Tosis points out, even as a Fana Miara, it's going to be there from the day before. Now, Shenken Rabbi Yochanan is not Shliach at all. Now, once we're talking about Rabbi Yosef ben Shaul, who's giving us these practical pointers that Rav used, the halacha, there's another interesting practical point, which is, what's the din about a ground up garlic, which has not been liquefied in your blender? So, hi tuma shechika, you ground up your garlic, you should know if you left it open, maybe you wouldn't eat it, but its snakes love it. And therefore, it would actually be sakana of gilui. Okay, next. So now we finally finished the opening of the Mishnah of the dinim of Beitza. That was Nolda B'Yontev, or Nolda B'Yontev after Shabbos, or Nolda on a Shabbos, or Nolda B'Shabbos, and then the next day was a Yontev, or one day of Rosh Hashanah, and the next day, or the 2 days of, oh my gosh, or the 2 days of the Yontev and Chutzlaritz. Let's move on. Okay, so the next thing we had in the Mishnah was the question, the machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, about the shiur of the Isser of Baal Yerah and Baal Yematzei on Chometz on the one hand, and on Seor on the other hand. So Beit Shammai omrim that the shear of the Isser b'nogea b'ayira b'ayimotzei is even one kizayit of Seor, but when it comes to Chometz, only a kikotevet, which is the next shear up. Remember, after the kizayis, between the kizayis and the kibetza, so we learned kikotevet we had back in the second Yuma. And that's the date. Mashenka and Kornel Beis Hillel, it's exactly the same. It's always a shear of a kizayis. That's the shear. My Tamai, the Beit Shammai, so where does Beit Shammai get the idea that it's a different shear? Because Beit Shammai says, look, it's clear. Why does the Torah mention separately Chometz and Seor? The Lo'irelach HaChametz, Lo'irelach HaSeor, I mean, why mention it separately? So, I mean, I would just know it if you just mentioned the idea of Chometz, you know. And it must be that it would be a Kal V'chomer, no? Lichtov Rachmana Chometz. And then I would say to myself, I don't need Seor. I would say, look, Chometz is like, it's not going to be so powerful. I mean, if you mix Chometz with something else, it's not going to be like leaveners. You're not going to call it, it's not a leavening agent. Seor is a leavening agent. It's very powerful. It's going to cause other things to become Chometz. So I would make a Kal V'chomer. If Chometz, which is not such a powerful leavener, and it's nonetheless, I'm not allowed to have it around in the house, and the shear of the chametz would be a kizayin. So then kosher came Seor, which is chimutz and kosher. So why then did the Torah specify separately Seor? Must be to tell me that these two separate Isurim have different shiurim. And therefore, if the standard shear would be the shear of a kizayin, so when it comes to the Seor, which is stronger, that must be the kizayin. And then the chometz, in order for it too to be included, must be the next step up, which is how Tosfos says. That's definitely the point. Rashi suggests maybe that then it would be shayach to Halacha L'Mashmi Sinai, but then Tosfos, I mean, the whole point over here is that we're learning it out from this pasuk. I could have been okay. So it would be the next step up would be a kikotet. Whereas Beisilul says, no, I need to know both chometz and tzor. I would never be able to make a kal v'chomer, and it is not extra because look, tzrich, I need both separately, chometz and tzor. Why? Because let's imagine that the Torah only wrote that tzor lo yimatzeh lechem and so on. But so I would have said, that's because chimutz akasha. Maybe chometz she'en chimutz akasha, maybe that wouldn't bichlal be aser, aim alone. Or maybe it's not aser at all, but maybe it would be only aser if it's bigger. Let's say, like you're saying, like a kotevet. So therefore I need to know that no, it's chometz, it's aser all on its own. If the Torah would have written chometz, I would have said, of course, the Torah asers chometz because it's edible. But you can't eat leavening agents. So sa'or, which is chimutz kash, is all very nice, but I mean, maybe something that people are not going to eat is not going to be asur by your rabbi Yamatze anyway. And therefore, maybe it's completely not asur, maybe it's the one that requires the bigger shir to be asur. There's different approaches in Rishonim. Therefore, I need to know tzricha. Dafka, the fact that it says both of them is telling me that they're both the same. That's the idea. And therefore, we know that the normal shir, the shir is the gezayis. Wait a minute. There's another pasuk over here that we're ignoring. I mean, Beit Shammai, he doesn't hold of the diak of Rabbi Zeira in the pasuk. I mean, Rabbi Zeira made a diak that's a very powerful diak, and it goes like this. And I mean, lechora, it seems to be undermining what it was that Beit Shammai is being medayik. Don't know Rabbi Zeira. Look, it's very strange that we have a pasuk that opens up with the word sa'or. Shivat yamim sa'or lo yimatzei bevatechem. And then it goes on to explain, because ki kol ochel machmetzet v'nichrutan nefesh ha'yid. What happened? How come it didn't continue? Ki kol ochel sa'or. Instead it says ki kol ochel machmetzet. Like, why did it change from the focus on sa'or to the focus on the chometz? It even says machmetzet, but we have the Gemara understands machmetzet elsewhere as meaning chometz that was nitchametz through a leavening agent. It didn't just become chometz on its own. Fine, even that's awesome. But why did we flip to machmetzet instead of ending the pasuk ki kol ochel sa'or, and therefore don't have any sa'or in your rishos, because you might come to be ochel sa'or. And this would be sort of an introduction to the idea of biur, and why it is the Torah so machmer, it shouldn't be anywhere around. So Beit Shammai thought he could ignore the pasuk, and the whole point in the pasuk is to teach me zeh sa'or v'zeh chometz. So how does Beit Shammai disagree? No, wait a second over here. You make a big mistake. The machlokas in the Mishnah between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel had nothing to do with eating chometz and eating sa'or. This pasuk over here has to do with eating chometz, eating sa'or, called ochel machmetzet, okay? That's a completely different issue. Leaning on feel, of course everybody agrees that chometz is exactly the same as sa'or, and sa'or is the same as chometz, and there's one shear, and that's the shear of gezayis. Keep legalin in biur. The only question over here was legabe by yirah by yamatzeh, which is b'chayvas in biur. So over there, Beit Shammai says you can't learn out that even though it uses the word biur, it's really going on the law. So Beit Shammai savri lo yafina biur miachila Beit Hillel savri yafina biur miachila. But of course we agree with the Rebbe Zeira. Everybody agrees with Rebbe Zeira legabe the shir of achila itmanani. And Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina explained this very clearly. He said the machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel in the Mishnah is only le'inin bi'ur, aber le'inin achila, divrei akol, zeh v'zeh b'gezayis. Everybody is made that gezayis is the shear. And you could see it from the bright. The bright also makes it very clear. Tanya Amiyachim. It says in the pasuk, v'lo yera elecha chametz, v'lo yera elecha se'or, v'chol gvulecha. This pasuk, and only this pasuk is the machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Where over there, Beit Shammai said tzor because I have a chometz b'kotevet, and Beit Hillel only b'zev b'zev because I. What do you think that the point is that this bright is making? This pasuk meaning b'nogea the bal yerah, but not the psukim that we're quoting before about achila. That's the point of the brisa. That don't think that there's a machlokas about achila. Fine. Now we finally get to the end of the mission. So the end of the mission talks about shechita. And what do you do with a chai of oaf that's going to require kisui hadam on yantav? So how are you going to get the offer on yantav to do the kisui hadam? And then the question is, can you shech even initially or not? Maybe is the question. Or can you cover it if you do shech? It's not really clear from the Mishnah which one of these is meant. So what we learn out is like this. Take a look at the lashon itself. The lashon is hashochet, and hashochet implies that this is talking about you already did it, right? You did it. So now it's the avah. Yes, there we have the shamah says, okay, look, if you already did it, so then take a deker, and you're allowed to do the kisi adam. But that's mashma, that we're not going to tell you that you're allowed to go ahead and to sheft when you don't have anything to cover the board with. You can't sheft because you have put yourself into matzah. We're going to need to be b'chalo yontif to go ahead and to get the dirt to cover it. No, so it's mashma, it's only b'diavad. Problem is that then what does the Mishnah continue with Beit Hillel? And what does Beit Hillel says? Don't sheft. Lo yishchot, don't sheft. And that means that the Tanna Kamma, meaning Beit Shammai, held that no, you can sheft. He's talking about don't sheft, and the Tanna Kamma must have been saying that you do sheft. Well, I mean, it's a good thing we didn't look at the end of the Mishnah, because this whole discussion is obviously going to be moot in a minute. But anyway, well, maybe that we could explain like this. We could say, Alo Kasha. Beit Hillel says, don't shecht and do kisui adam. Meaning, even though you shechted, you cannot do kisui adam. And Beis Shammai is saying, if you did shecht, you can do kisui adam. But Beis Hillel wasn't talking about that don't shecht. He's saying, don't think that if you shechted, you can do kisui. That's all that he's saying. Excuse me? The Sefer of the Mishnah says that is simply not true. Because at the end of the Mishnah, it says that Beit Shammai agrees, he's modim, that if you did sheft, but that you actually could dig up with the deker. So you could use this hole or spade, I'm not quite sure how it's shaped, and you could be mechaseh. Doesn't that imply that the Reisha was talking about, as we said, not the yavad, but that you can go ahead and check lechatchila? That's what Beit Shammai is saying. So then that would mean that hashochet does not mean hashochet. You already shefted. So then what does it mean? Oh, my rabbi, he's like this. Hashochet, this guy is a shochet who's about to shef. That's the point. So he is coming to be shochet. And he's coming and he's asking the Rav. So can I go ahead? He's barley malek. He's coming to ask the Rav. Am I allowed to shef? So the Mishnah is saying, okay, what's the din? Ketzad Omer lo. Now we have a machlokes. So Beit Shammai says, tell him shecht, and then you're going to be able to dig up some offer, and you can go and cover it. Whereas Beit Hillel says, we tell him, no, don't shecht. Unless you already had offer muchan mivod yom, don't shecht. Rabbi Yosef says, not exactly. That's not correct. The way you said it, I mean, the idea is correct, but you're off. I'll tell you why you're off, because what the Mishnah is really saying is, yeah, what Rava said, the first part is true. The Shechet is coming to ask, okay, what do? I need to shecht, it's yomtev, and I want meat. Can I shecht? So he goes and he asks the Rav. Kate said, Omerlo, here's what you should have said, okay, slightly different. Not that Beit Shammai says, go ahead and shecht, and then dig up. Actually, what Beit Shammai says is, go dig up, and then go shecht and cover. So lechafor, then sheft, and then cover it. And Beis Hillel says, no, you can't sheft unless you already had the offer from before. So, I mean, okay, what's this difference based on? The difference between Rava and Reb Yosef? I mean, the Nafkamini is, according to Rava, Beit Shammai is saying, first you got to sheft, then you can cover. And according to Reb Yosef, the guy has to first have offer and then sheft. What's the difference? So Abaye said to Reb Yosef, I'm assuming that the difference between you and Rabbah is like, the difference between you and Rabbah is in the halacha of Rabbi Zera Amaravka Miflegev, which we had learned before in Chulin, that Omer Rabbi Zera Amarav, if you're going to do Shechita, then you have to do the Shechita on Ofar, not on hard ground or rock or a cement floor. You have to put down first Ofar to absorb the blood, and then you cover it on top. Because the Torah said, "Hashochet sarshiten offer lamata v'offer lamala," because the pasuk says, "V'shafach et damo v'chiso be'afar." No, it doesn't say v'chiso afar. Use afar to cover it. It says cover it in the earth. How do you cover it in the earth? You must have put down first offer, so that the blood is now on the bottom. It's on offer. And now, when you put the next layer of offer on top, now it is going to be within the offer. This teaches us. for Lamara. So I guess this is what you're arguing in. Because Rabbi Yosef apparently agrees with Rabbi Zeira. So he says that Beit Shammai must have told him, first dig it up, spread it out on the ground, do the shechita, and then use the rest of it to cover it. And you apparently don't hold a Rabbi Zeira, Rabbi Leslie to Rabbi Zeira. Omar Lay, so Rabbi Yosef said to Abaye, no, we both hold the Rabbi Zeira. Bein Ladidi, bein the Rabbi East on the Rabbi Zeira. The machlokas is that according to Rabbi, he says that Beit Shammai only said that if you shech, that you can then put offer on. So that would mean that he is limiting the heter of Beit Shammai to where you already had offer lamata. Then you can go ahead and you can then become chayev in the offer. If you don't even have offer lamata, then Beit Shammai says you can't. Why not? Because what we're going to tell you now to dig up some of the offer, put it lamata, and then what happens? You come to shech and you say, you know what, I don't really need it. Or I don't like the way this animal looks. Forget it. I don't want this animal. So then it turns out that you did it for nothing. So Chashina Dimu Mamluk Velo Shakat. So what if you change your mind? And you're therefore, he tells him, first you do your shechita, then we'll see what the heter is. Meaning that if you don't need to put offer down lamata, because there already was offer lamata, you had some loose dirt anyway, then you can go ahead. And if you actually do it, so then you can go ahead and do it. Because if not, so then you're going to be doing this, all of this for no purpose at all. And I, Rabbi Yosef says, and I say, no, Adifa, the lo sharitale, if you're not going to allow him to go ahead and check under these circumstances, atilim nui misimchat yom tov. So now that means that when we finally get to the end of the Mishnah and understanding what the machlokas is over here between the Amoraim, that remarkably we get back to the beginning of the Mishnah, which, as we said, that the whole question of Muktzah, you're living the Renachman, the way that the Rambam was learning, is the question of how to make a difference to your Yontav, that it should be better, more Simchas Yontav, not less Simchas Yontav, because of that, this is going to be true even the Gabe Shechita. But Beis Hillel is made that if you did do the Shechita, that you're allowed to be Chofer B'Dekar V'Yechaseh. How is that possible? I mean, why are we telling you that you should be over? I mean, there's a lot of issues over here. I mean, okay, there's muktzah, obviously. So I understand muktzah maybe will tell you're allowed to do it. But I mean, over here, if you're going to be digging with the decker, so then if you're digging in a field so that it's going to have a din, like we saw back in the Sefer Shabbos, it's going to have a din of chayrish. If you're digging in an area where you would want to build something so that it would have a din of binyan. If you have the ground that afterwards you're going to need to turn into offer that is going to be able to be sprinkled over the dam, then you're going to be over also on tochen, because you need to crush it. All of this besides muktzah. So why are we telling a person to do something that's going to be b'chayvah to do all of these isurim that could have all been taken care of before? And we're never matir, we're doing something on yontem that was something that would easily have been doable before, which we'll talk about when we finally get to the Malachas and Yontav. Om Reb Zreka, Om Reb Yehuda. And Reb Zreka says, well, it doesn't mean you put in the Dekar. It's Yeshlo Dekar, no, it's Miba Od Yom. The truth is, if you consider, why does the Mishnah care about telling us how to get the dirt? Use a Dekar. If I don't want to use a Dekar, suppose I want to use my child's pail and shovel, made out of plastic, that's not good enough. Don't teach me how to get the, I'll figure out how to get the offers. In other words, if the mission is telling me that you should be called for the decker, you know what the point is? The point is that, think about it. What do you do when you finish with the hoe? You go bang and it sticks in the ground and it stays there until you need it the next time, right? So that's basically, it's telling you that use that shovel or hoe that you had in the ground, pick it up. So anyway, first of all, it's not muktzah, because that means that any of the dirt that was in there, you already had basically defined when you went bang, that's the next bunch of dirt that I'm going to be taking. So it's mukha. In other words, you defined it as the dirt that you want to use. Furthermore, you've already dug the hole. Now you're just removing the dirt, right? So therefore, if you have a decker that was there from before, so then you don't have to worry about the harisha, you don't have to worry about the muktzah, and that means that basically this is considered to be mukhan. So this would be true according to everybody. Even Beit Shammai would be maida that you would need to have maybe the decker to be there from before. Okay, what about the fact that you're still going to need to crush it and then you're going to be doing tchina? Look, it's got to be talking about that we have this loose ground that won't require tchina. So be offer tikholach. And what about the fact that you're making a hole? Well, the Amr Kedra Rabba, look, basically it's true that there was dirt in the hole before, even though you had done the digging. But the point is, if all you need is to remove that dirt, that's not called digging a hole. Because a chol fagumah b'shabbat ain't a terech ela la'ofra poter alel. Because that is basically all you're doing is wrecking things. I mean, we are digging a hole, making a hole in the ground, where what you want is just the dirt. That's mekalka. Fine. So now we understand our mission. We're going to leave the last piece of the Mishnah for after Rosh Hashanah, Bezrat Hashem. And so we've managed to do one of our dapim, and our second dap we will do at what time on Mitzvah? Rosh Hashanah is a quarter to nine. I think that there's a plan to have Shnei Yomim of Rosh Hashanah, which is probably going to remain in effect because of this business about Eliyahu HaNavi not showing up on the Rav Yantam and so on. Even though we did put in a request and we all signed that we're not worried about our hachanas, we took care of our hachanas earlier and we're happy, but it would appear we're going to have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah.